So, I'm nervous. I've done a fair bit of public speaking, but it always makes me nervous. So, I'm going to say a little prayer beforehand. And if you want to join in and just close your eyes. Higher power, I recognize your presence here, and I ask that you be with me and that your voice speaks through me as I share my experience, strength, and hope, and that this becomes an experience of learning and of celebrating recovery for each of us here. Amen.
Amen.
So I want to talk about my upbringing, my experience through the lens of boundaries. And as I explored how to do this, I ended up planning to share tonight a lot more about my story than I thought I would. I was born into a boundaryless ACA family, but it was hard to identify us as ACAs because neither of my parents really drank, except socially, occasionally. I never saw my parents drunk. My mother saw her father drunk, and that's something I didn't know until just a couple of years ago. So we were this normal-looking family, and there were a lot of strengths. I mean, I had a roof over my head, I had food, I had clothes, I had a routine. All of that was really stable. What I didn't have was a sense of being loved, of being cherished, of being allowed to be an imperfect child. There was lots of verbal abuse, there was physical abuse, and I was reading in our daily reader earlier this week or last week, there was a term called soul raped. I believe my body tells me that I was molested by my father as a very young girl. And then I know he covertly sexualized me when I was a teenager. So that's a rape, a degradation that goes really, really deeply. And coupled with the physical abuse that didn't make any sense, I remember my parents, I was little when they did this. When they wanted to punish me, they asked me to go find a switch, a flexible branch. I had to go outdoors and cut and bring in my own switch. And it had to meet certain criteria. And I remember one time being totally terrified and crying because I couldn't find one. And so I brought back a rock and I said, here, you can throw this at me. Mm-hmm. These things happen fairly frequently. And my parents, I mean, I think they parented pretty much the way a lot of parents did in the spare the rod, spoil the child era. And both of them lost their father. Both my grandfathers hung themselves in the barn during the Depression. My father was 3 when it happened, and my mother was 13. And I know from trauma theory that when these kinds of traumas happen, that the person often gets stuck emotionally at that age. So I was being raised by a 3-year-old and a 13-year-old who were 21 and 18 when they got married, and I knew I was a mistake because I was born 5.5 months after they got married, and 5.5-month-old preemies didn't survive back in the 1950s. But to me, all of this was normal. I mean, I knew it sort of wasn't normal because I resented the punishment that didn't seem to measure up to what I had done. In fact, I don't remember any of what I did to provoke the punishment that I received. But I normalized it. And I took the strengths and I moved forward. Now, my parents were very controlling. Everything had to be run through them. I mean, I could pick my own clothes, but I couldn't decide not to eat everything that I put on my plate. I could pick what I would wear that day, but my mother bought my clothes. And so when I went to college, and all of that structure and all of that oppression fell away, I began acting out. And I was acting out the toxic shame. I became promiscuous. I became a nurse, which was a codependent, you know. We say in nursing that that's a diagnosis for codependence. So I became really good at caretaking. And I stayed in denial about all of this, somehow justifying in my mind that I deserved this punishment, even though I couldn't quite make sense of it. I normalized it, and even though I was exposed to John Bradshaw and his work, that wasn't my family because they weren't alcoholics. And I hadn't heard of ACA, and we didn't have the Red Book back in those days. At the same time, after graduate school, I started growing spiritually, and I found a spiritual home that meant a great deal to me and deeply, deeply connected to my higher power, to infinite presence, and to a spirituality that was open at the top and non-dogmatic, which was a wonderful antidote for the kind of structure and rules that I had grown up in. At the same time, because I was still in denial and I hadn't really recognized the extent of the damage that had been done to me, there's a thing called a spiritual bypass, and I think in some ways I was on a spiritual bypass, even though I had a deep connection to Source. I thought that my religious path could handle everything. I didn't know that I needed recovery. And so I kept bouncing in and out of relationships and managed to have some long-term relationships, but then when those ended, I would go back to trying to find the love that that little child was searching for in any relationship. And it didn't work. Amazingly, right? At the same time, my family relationships, especially with my parents, were a mess. I was acting out with them. My mother was trying to exert even more control. And when I went back to visit, it was full of conflict, full of shaming. And at one point, she interrupted a family dinner because I didn't come clean up the kitchen exactly when she wanted. She was screaming at me at the top of her lungs, and my father stood up to defend her. And so I vowed not to go back to my family's, to my parents' home, and I stayed away from their home for about 7 years. And my sisters knew about this, and they backed me up, and we held family gatherings at their homes instead. But then I bottomed out. My spirituality grew so much that I became a minister and I started a church. It was an extremely satisfying career. And then I became the pastor at an established church in California. And because I was acting out in relationships and didn't know I need help, I lost that ministry. So I dabbled in 12 steps. I got some serious counseling at the time, and I joined a support group that was supposed to be 12-step oriented, but it was just another shaming experience because they really did not follow the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. And then I got into a long-term relationship and I moved to Ventura. And it turned out to be not a stable relationship because both of us were codependents. And we looked at the list, the characteristics of codependents, and there's a lot of them. And the ones that he wasn't, I was, and the ones that I wasn't, he was. And then there were middle ground where we both were. And we got into CODA, and he took it somewhat more seriously than I did, and I really didn't work my recovery at that point until the relationship fell apart. So that's when I got serious. And I learned about boundaries in CODA. Boundaries, what a concept. I hadn't been taught boundaries, even though I had begun exerting them at times. I didn't feel solid in how to do that, and I didn't feel worthy that I should be able to set a boundary, and I didn't have any skill in how to set a boundary. And so it would just be like, here's this wall, climb over it, damn it. And I wasn't skillful at that. And then I also found that there's this thing called the inner child. That was through Pia Melody's work. Pia Melody is the woman who first described codependence in her book, Facing Codependence. And she says that the precious child in a functional family is valuable, vulnerable, imperfect, dependent, and immature. And those are things that I was not allowed to be any of in my family of origin. So preparing for this speaking tonight was a big emotional journey for me in reviewing all of those things. And I remember the first time I set a serious boundary with my father. I was a teenager, and so I was developing and maturing physically. And he decided that I had done something that was so horrendous that I needed to be beaten with a belt in the kitchen with my pants down. I don't remember what the offense was, but what I do remember is how angry and violated I felt, and how wrong I knew that to be. And something in me stood up and said, you are not going to give him any satisfaction with this punishment. So I didn't cry, I didn't whimper, I didn't say a word. And when after, I'd say it was at least 3 or 5 minutes of the belt, he stopped. I turned around and I faced him and I said, are you done? And I walked away and he never laid a hand on me again. But that's an extreme way to set a boundary, with that kind of anger. And it works sometimes, but is it a functional way to set a boundary? You know, at that point, I didn't even know how to ask those questions. I didn't even know that there were these kinds of questions to ask. I just knew that something inside me needed protection, and I found it. So I guess my loving parent showed up, but I didn't know what to call it at that point. I hear some people say that they don't want to talk about their childhood because they don't want to dwell in it. They don't want to hang out there. They don't want to give it any energy. And I think there's a way that we can look at our past as a deepening path to understanding where we came from and why it had the impact on us that it did. So as I look back at all those numerous ongoing boundary violations, all those criticisms of my posture, my hairstyle, my body, my grades, anything that wasn't perfect, you know, I can recognize with compassion that I was not equipped to even know what a boundary was, much less to set one. And so it helps me approach now with a sense of gentleness and self-forgiveness. And it also helps me understand that how lost my parents were in this process as well. Then I looked at ACA and what we say about boundaries. And of course, the laundry list, when I looked at it in the sense of how it reflected my lack of boundaries, I found these characteristics. Number 1, 2, 3, 5, 6, 7, 11, and 12 all lined up. So 7 for many of us, when we read it in the room, I see many people nodding. We get guilt feelings when we stand up for ourselves instead of giving in to others. 5, we live life from the viewpoint of victims and are attracted by that weakness in our love and friendship relationships. 11, we judge ourselves harshly and have a very low sense of self-esteem. I was amazed at how many of them reflected the sense of not knowing how to navigate boundaries. And then I found a definition of boundaries in the Red Book. It's on pages 346 to 347. And here's what it said. There are different types of boundaries, but their purposes are to allow us to remain safe, respected, and free of harm. All boundaries remind us that the feelings, behaviors, and attitudes of others are separate from our own. That's a major revelation over and over again. Caregivers take care of other people's feelings. Enmeshed families are involved in what's going on inside of everybody else's head and second guessing. So to remind myself that the feelings, behaviors, and attitudes of others are separate from mine is a major guidepost. The feelings and thoughts of others are not our responsibility. So that is a way of setting a boundary that is separate. You know, it helps us to, for me, it helps me to stop enmeshing. And fortunately, I have some fellow travelers in my meeting in Ventura who are very good at helping me recognize when I'm doing this, when I'm trying to get in and take care of another person's feelings instead of just taking care of myself. As I was thinking more about boundaries, I think about boundaries as a practice of emotional sobriety. When we can set boundaries in a sane and balanced way, when we can set them without being a victim or a perpetrator, when we can state them as a request instead of a demand, those are arenas of emotional sobriety. And man, do I struggle with that. So when I struggle with boundaries, these are questions that I like to ponder. When I feel violated, when I feel like, oh man, somebody just crossed my boundary, is that my ego speaking, or is that my sense of inner integrity that's been violated? And when it's my ego, then I need to take a look at what I can do for self-care, what I can do to take care of this situation within myself instead of projecting it out onto the other person. Another question I ask is, what need am I seeking to meet? And, you know, when I can define the need, then that helps me set the boundary clearly, or it helps me understand, you need to meet that need yourself, not ask somebody else to help you with it. A third question is, how important is this? How important is this issue? I had a boss once, and I was complaining to her about a project that we were engaged in, and how people were opposing us, and she said, "Yeah, I see that, but is this the hill you want to die on?" You know, she said, "These things have a way of working out. You figure out how it needs to be done, and I will help you with the system issues." But I've always remembered that. Is this the hill that you want to die on? Is this issue where I'd like to set a boundary and chew at somebody, is it that important? Or can I just accept, can I apply the serenity principle and accept the situation as it is and grow within myself instead of setting a boundary? Another thing that's really important in setting a boundary, and I think this particularly applies for me and my family of origin, maybe to others of you in this room too, is this the same person that I'm going to try to set a boundary with? Because I'm sure we've all had this experience when we try to set a boundary with a person who's not safe, who's not sane in the sense of knowing what a boundary is and where your boundary begins and their boundary ends. It's just a practice in frustration. And so I'm still struggling with that. One of my sisters I'm very close to, I set a boundary with her once. She was being righteous and judgmental, and I said, "There you go again, you're doing that thing about always being right." And we tried to resolve it, and by that time I was so dissociated, I was no use to anybody. And we set it aside, and the next morning she got up and apologized to me because she realized, she said, "I didn't realize that dynamic was going on in our relationship as well." So when I expressed that boundary to her, she was sane enough to look at it and look at her part, and our relationship has grown because of it. My other sister had the opposite reaction when I was telling her, when she shamed me, I didn't like it, and she said, "Well, if I can't share my opinion with you, then that means that you don't accept me the way I am, and then we can't have a relationship." So I'm still struggling with, how do I set a boundary with this sister? Mm-hmm. And maybe I only set it within myself and recognize if I'm going to be around her, these things might happen, and maybe I practice not reacting. Yeah. A really important thing for me to consider is, in setting a boundary, will I honor this boundary? If I state a boundary to a person and they don't honor it, am I willing to walk away from the situation? Am I willing to enforce it in some way, in a gentle way that's healthy for me, but conveys a clear message to them? And I think it's really worthwhile, as I find sometimes in setting boundaries, to examine, is this a flexible boundary or is it absolute? Am I setting down a wall here or a picket fence? Is my boundary now one that's going to stay the same, or as I gather more information, can it shift? Can there be a dialogue and an exchange about this boundary? And some boundaries are able to be flexible, I find, and some are not. I think probably the most important thing to ask is, am I taking care of myself in this situation? That's critically important in setting a boundary. And then there's the internal process of getting to the point where I will speak the boundary and or outline it. And so I go through all of these little internal struggles. And am I worthy? Should I set this boundary? Should I just let it happen? And, you know, I struggle with that. Will it shatter the relationship if I set a boundary? Can I state it as a request and not a demand? And can I state it clearly, gently? And most importantly, does this boundary empower me? Even if the boundary is not honored, will I be empowering myself by setting it? And that's one of the things I found in my recovery, is that speaking my truth in a gentle way, in a clear way, is a way of reparenting myself. It's a way of giving voice to that inner child. And it often doesn't matter so much if the other person hears the boundary and respects it, because my inner child hears me speaking it. And then she feels safe, and she feels nurtured and heard. So this is a kind of a talk that might open up all kinds of questions and dialogue, and it's certainly not something that I think we ever finish. I think this setting boundaries, negotiating boundaries, navigating the territory that allows us to have the strength to set boundaries is an ongoing recovery that we do one day at a time. And it's a journey that's never done. Thank you for being my fellow travelers.